This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the change of the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Red, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. I'm Chuck Gregory. I'm coming to you from Fort Lauderdale on Revolution Radio. That's revolution.radio, a listener-supported network that deserves your support. We have a new American dream, not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were, a country where people help each other, people work with each other to make something better than either any of them could have done on their own. A country where people love each other. Yeah, I'll say that. That's what we're about. Our first guest tonight is poet Abba Bird. Abba, it was one of the very first guests on this show, something like 12 years ago. And she now joins me every month, and I'm going to bring her in right now. So here we go. Calling Abba Bird. Abba's a poet. Very interesting person.
Hi, Chuck.
Well, hello, Abba. Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, good. I'm very glad to have you here. How is everything?
Well, we're having a really hardcore heat wave. Are you having a really, really hardcore heat wave too?
Yeah, it's been really hot. Yeah. Very hot.
Right. So just, you know, dealing with that right now. But, you know, soon it'll be autumn and cool down and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
But, anyway, just wanting to wish you a happy summer and all the listeners out there a happy summer. And hopefully everybody's having a great time and is protected from the heat and stuff. But I was going to do another, I was going to read a chapter from the cat book that is a throwback chapter.
Oh.
Do you want to do that? Should I do that?
Sure, that sounds very interesting.
Okay. So this was the letters from the family cat. Now, the only thing about that is that it's very, I don't know, I mean, since this whole censorship drop down stuff on the station, I don't know about the language in this particular piece, because I'm bringing it up.
Well, yeah, I mean, you would have to enter it out as you were reading anything that, you know, Carlin words or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I'll pass on Ben reading it, because I don't want to censor my own work or my own language.
Yeah.
So, I mean, already, you know, this is an ugly manifestation of censorship, that I'm not able to share my work that I would like to, and that, you know. So, anyway, but we will talk about other things, I guess.
Okay.
One thing that is really concerning for me lately that I have noticed in the world is that, or not in the world, but in the U.S., more and more, I have been traveling a lot, and I have been interviewing and talking to and helping homeless people that are living on the streets. And I'm talking to them and finding out, you know, information and what, you know, what could possibly be done to help them. And, you know, for a lot of them, it's, I'm sure there in Florida, you have a homeless issue, because of the, you know, the nice weather, and I don't know what it's like there, but you've heard that a third of all homeless people in the U.S. live in California, and many of them are in Southern California because the weather's so nice. It's like you won't freeze to death. You know, even during these heat waves, there's still cool places you can go to the beach, and, you know, it's not like being in, you know, Nevada or Arizona where there's just no escape, you know?
Yeah.
So there's places for them to go, but I mean, you drive around and there are just huge homeless encampments everywhere. I mean, everywhere that isn't somewhere like Beverly Hills or, you know, where you have really, really a lot of wealth, because the police departments really exist to protect the ruling classes. They're not there for us.
Yeah.
If they were, we would have a much different society. So, you know, when they call the police, it's a much different response than, you know, if like somebody in a working class neighborhood calls. So, you know, a homeless encampment would ever, I mean, it wouldn't last in places like that, but in places like downtown LA, Hollywood, places where, you know, there's a lot of tourists, or that they just don't have police manpower. They don't have I don't want to say they don't have the resources. They have plenty of resources, but they just don't allocate them to this type of thing because nobody knows what to do. Or actually, I think people do know what to do, but they don't do it. And it's the elephant in the room, which is homelessness in the U.S., which is completely an insult to our culture and our society and our economy and everything about it. And I think the reason that it exists, a lot of times, many people are, you have a lot of, you know, Ronald Reagan cut out the, you know, he made it so people didn't have institutions to go into, that they had to go out on the street. So since then, we've had this, you know, I mean, and every year it just gets worse and worse, because you also have all these, you know, immigrants coming here. They're taking up housing. They're given, you know, vouchers, and, you know, you have these illegals. I wouldn't even call them migrants. I would just call them illegal invaders to the U.S. are given vouchers and hotels and food. Meanwhile, our veterans and our American citizens that were born here and probably have, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 generations here are living on the streets. And you have foreign investors coming here and buying up all these properties. So, I mean, there's certain neighborhoods in LA that you go to, and it's nothing but Chinese people. And we're talking miles and miles and miles and miles. Now, they got here, they didn't pay into the system. They didn't deal with, let's say, you know, I look at all the Black people that are here that have been here since the 1600s. They're, you know, they've paid taxes, they've dealt with racism, they've built the culture, they've built society, they contributed, they dealt with all kinds of stuff. And a lot of them are living, are stuck on the streets because there aren't services for them. And they're not, I'm not saying that every, that, and we're not talking about government handouts here. We're talking about a society that's structured to punish poor people and to reward wealth, even if it's gained through nefarious means, which much of it is.
Yeah.
So that is rewarded. Yeah. Meanwhile, if you are a good citizen and you've just, you know, I'm not saying a tax-paying citizen is a good citizen, but if you've paid into the system for so many years, for so many generations, as let's say as a in your family line or culturally, in my opinion, in many people's opinion, those people should be entitled to at least a comfortable standard of living, at least a home, if not an apartment, something other than you're going to live on the streets and nobody's going to help you or do anything about it.
Right.
So I'm just wondering where this leaves Americans, that I'm seeing so many Americans being pushed to the side for illegal immigrants coming here that are not even part of the culture, and they're being, you know, raised up a level. And many, something like 90% of the new jobs that were filled in the last quarter were to foreigners. So the new jobs did not go to Americans. The new jobs went to foreigners. So I'm wondering what's going on here.
Well, aren't these jobs that Americans won't do, and that's why they're all going to the immigrants?
Well, one, I think that's a myth. It's not the Americans won't do them. Americans can't do them because they can't live on the money that they're being paid. And also, this thing about jobs, many of these jobs are useless and not necessary. You know, it's like you wonder, people have this obsession with workers and jobs and the economy. When, you know, we're forgetting that, you know, there's people and there's food and there's livelihoods and there's general, you know, there's general basics that people need to survive. So there's this obsession with talking about jobs and this obsession with talking about work, when often this stuff is not even necessary. You know, it's like, we're workers. Oh, all of a sudden, because they're workers, they should be allowed here and, you know, to be allowed to work. But it's like, I mean, what are those jobs? That's what I wonder. Is it construction jobs to build more homes for more rich people from other countries? It's construction jobs to build things that we don't need or want.
Yeah.
So even the jobs are not something that Americans want or need. So you're bringing people here to work jobs that then Americans don't want, don't need, and frankly don't want to, you know, deal with all these extra people here. Capitalism is it eats itself. So it's a snake that's eating its tail. You know, it's like it's just a predatory system that never stopped, you know, being predatory on people, whatever it can do. So, you know, I don't know why people would still continue to come here knowing, you know, what they're up against here, or it's just confusing to me. why people would want to come here. You know, when you look at the state of the U.S. and the water system, the food system, the medical system, I mean, who would want that? So I question people that want to come here for this thing about better life. Oh, I come here for a better life. I mean, that's like the buzzword for, okay, well, since you want a better life, then we have to help you get it. Meanwhile, Americans that are here are suffering. They don't have a better life. Do you have a better life from, being here? Or, you know, as you get older and as you are, you know, going into retirement, or even if you're working full time, are you getting a better life? I mean, what is, you know, what's happening to make your life better? And meanwhile, you know, the government seems to be enabling, you know, these foreign cultures to come here and infiltrate our societies, take our homes. This thing about jobs, it's like, I think that people are focusing on the wrong things. They're taking our jobs. Well, you have a point. It's jobs that Americans can't really do. But then again, it's like, well, they're jobs that are not really necessary. And if they are, it's for things that, you know, as a whole, as a society, we don't really benefit from. Are we going to benefit from another strip mall, from another corporate office building? Are we going to benefit from a big condo building for the rich? They call them artist lofts.
Well, I was actually thinking more of, you know, like field workers, you know, migrant workers, agricultural jobs.
Right. Well, there's already enough people to do those jobs. And also it's becoming automated where people aren't even really doing those jobs anymore, picking strawberries, picking tomatoes, all that stuff. A lot of that stuff is now, you know, it's becoming done by robots.
Really?
So, which, you know, seems to make sense because they're much more efficient to,
right.
You know, yeah. Do all that stuff. And they don't need breaks. They don't need water. They don't need a bathroom. They'll work 24/7.
Right.
They don't have mistakes. They don't complain. They don't harass. They don't sexually harass other robots. They don't rape.
Right.
They don't, you know, they don't become criminals or steal, or they don't become drug addicts and all the messy human issues that American society seems to invite, enable, and perpetuate. We don't have those issues with robots.
Yeah.
I can understand.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then that leaves, well, what about these people? Now, why has nobody communicated with these countries? I mean, I would think if you're losing all your citizens, if you're from El Salvador, Honduras, Mexico, and all your citizens are leaving, wouldn't you want to, like, make some changes to your society and your culture and your country? Lose everybody?
Yeah, right. Wouldn't you think so?
Well, and then it enables countries. I mean, when the U.S. just accepts people without even, you know, they're letting people in here without even, you know, checking their documents or anything. And many people are, if you notice, a lot of the people, all of a sudden they're bringing kids. A lot of these kids are trafficked people. These are trafficked children, trafficked women. That's many of the people that are coming here. And one of the things that I'm really concerned about is the law. It's like it enables these countries to get away with these policies that are really, you know, inhumane. And by the U.S. just accepting people instead of, you know, telling the governments of these countries to, you know, can you make a country work better? It's such a mystery to me. And maybe you have some input, Chuck, to why a country would continually brutalize its own citizens and people are just leaving in droves, and then you did not make changes. How?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have no answer for that one. I really don't. Well, Abba, I really should play Frank's recording now. So, you know, we should stop here until next month. But thank you so much for being part of the show.
Well, we have a lot more to talk about, Chuck, and I'm appreciate you listening, and I'm sorry that you didn't have an opportunity to chime in a little. Maybe you did a little bit, but I would love to get your thoughts. And you're, you know, trying to maybe solve these problems and have people, like governments actually respond to the needs of the people.
Right. Well, see, this way I get a chance to think about it a little bit. Thank you.
All right, Chuck, I'll talk to you next month.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Always a treat to have Ava Bird on the New American Dream radio show. And I am now going to play for you the talk I had with Frank Cordero of the Des Moines Catholic Worker. I spoke to him a couple of hours ago. So here we go.
Yo, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. It's pouring rain here, but that's all right. I'm safe at home.
That's got to be a little more of a relief. We're still under the humid. It's like 82, but measured by the humidity, it's 101. I mean, this whole scene here is like, really hard. Yeah, we're in the bad air quality time, too. So, blah, blah, welcome to America. Oh, and the president says that, the climate change is real. So, boom. Yeah, great. All of that being said, we just got the Via Fascis, the issue of the Via Fascis, in the mail, and got the hard copy today. So it looks good. Look forward to
seeing it. Great. I will look forward to seeing that.
Yeah, because it's a great setup for the next fight between the Des Moines Catholic Worker and the hierarchy. You know, we have these ongoing battles. I guess they're just kind of a regurgitation of the old communion wars, you know. Who can receive? Who can't receive? And we're tugging and pushing on them. And this letter from the bishop still has me, going. Did I share with you last week? Well, just another phrase I just need to about the sisters. This is when he says, like, you know, he makes up. Oh, now I know why I'm having trouble with this guy. He hits both of my bad buttons. He's simultaneously a Pharisee and a scribe. By that I mean, he's a Pharisee because he's a priest, you know. He's a bishop. That's a priest. That's what Pharisee was, the priestly class in Jesus' scene. And the scribe were the attorneys.
Right. Okay.
Now, Bishop William has been a Catholic theologian at Loras College for 15, 20 years.
Okay.
So he is canonically, that's a canonical distinction, just like clerics, priests, deacons, whatever.
Okay.
He has that, they have a prescribed obligation to check the bishops on the way in which they are preserving, teaching, the teachings. So they're just as culpable. This is a guy who in one of our conversations, he didn't want to come and pray with us because our byline for the Hiroshima Nagasaki thing, was that, the United States has committed countless war crimes, since World War II. And he said, where'd you get that? And I just said, well, this is a given. It's rhetorical. I don't know. Oh. Oh, my gosh. Hey, you know, right in the middle of this, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
This is an Amber Alert.
Oh. What?
Okay. Amber Alert. Okay. Well, I don't know what to do with that. I didn't even know that happened. Whoa. Okay. So, What? I don't know what to do. Here, hope I don't lose you. Oh, my God. Are you there?
The Amber Alert went off, in your area? Or, I mean, is that on your phone, or is it...
It must be in my area on the phone.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting.
Well, hey, it's always something, right?
Hey, welcome to America. Yes. I think we pause a moment, think about what that alert's all about, and then we move on. The punching all the time on the screen, one way or the other, with empathy or with vengeance. Vengeance plays quite well, but, you know, empathy's okay for second place. The rich move on, the wars are won, long live the empire. God, we did this Roman thing. We got it down. I'm so sad we happen to be put the face of Jesus on it. That's my problem. Yeah. Well, all that being said, the bishops got in trouble with the sisters. Oh, where was I? Okay. I was reading the document, and then we got rudely interrupted. Here it is. All right. He says, since we met, he says, two areas of serious concerns have arisen since we met. One, your recent public support and solidarities with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence at the most recent Des Moines Pride Parade. This is highly objectionable and insulting to our religious sisters of various communities who have selfishly served the church in our diocese. And beyond, for more than a century, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence lampooned and misappropriate the symbols associated with the religious life and make mockery of these noble and dedicated women who have served all sorts of vulnerable peoples using them for their... Okay, now, it says, using them for their own purposes and agenda to a degree that is not only, what did he say in the second page? He says not only offensive, but blasphemous. Blasphemous! Okay, hold on. Let this sink in. My bishop named this group whose sole purpose is to lampoon a clerical religious life in the Catholic Church. And they do that by being themselves because they are gay and a targeted community. And the Catholic Church really has called them less than human almost, and said that they are an unnatural disorder. Really? That's the church's teaching. And they are saying, like, we're going to get it up on the church one way or another because of their retardedness, and we're going to lampoon them. But that's funny. And we're gay. And we're drag. This is not blasphemy. This is what the prophets did. They lampooned the kings. This is what Jesus did in the temple. He lampooned the temple. Oh, bishops, what up? And this is the other thing that's got me going. I'm really geared up. The Roman Catholic Church in its 2,000-year history and its global presence makes it the longest, oldest organization to be lampooned by the most people ever. So this is my question. Why is it that they're picking on the queer drag crowd who are lampooning in the best of spirit the ugly clericalism that has plagued us? Why is that a problem? And in another line, then the other thing that got me in trouble is two things. The other thing was that I mentioned the name of Reverend Amy Bruner, who is a woman, Roman Catholic priest, that she got ordained.
Right.
That's how she presented herself, you know, and I'm You know, and I, again, I told her, like, you know, Amy, love you dearly because you're helping us. Love you dearly because you sit around the table and you pray with us. Love you dearly because you're willing to understand we're all walking in the discipleship. We have a kindred spirit here around this table. But the fact that you are a woman priest because of what you call apostolic succession doesn't mean a damn thing. And then I say, but don't get mad, because the guys, the fact that the guys say we have apostolic succession, that doesn't mean a damn thing to me either. Really, that's just silly. At this point in human history, as we are doing so badly as Christians, we should not measure our ability to celebrate the Eucharist one way or the other on anything called apostolic succession. It should be nothing short than, are we following the guy we
right.
say we are sharing at the table
uh-huh.
and doing the what he did? And there's no way you can make Jesus in the script look pro-rich, pro-war, pro-U.S. empire.
That seems pretty clear, yeah.
Well, this is all we get from the bishops.
Yeah.
And this is terrible. I'm sorry, I'm calling them out. Now, it's sort of, for me, it's sort of like the Black Lives Matter folks, you know?
Uh-huh.
I'm there, I supported them. You know, I wouldn't protest the way they protest. It, all that ugly, bad language, I just wouldn't do it. But,
uh-huh.
hey, I'm thinking racism is the issue. People are raising it here. Where would Jesus be? And I said, would he be with the Black Lives Matter guys? Or would he be with the bishop hiding? He'd be in the street with the Black Lives Matter folks.
Right.
And I don't recommend it, but I recommend anybody who thinks Jesus is such a nice guy, read chapter 23 in Matthew. It's nothing but ugly curses against the scribes and the Pharisees of the temple. I mean, he holds nothing back. These are like swear words in their world. Hardly flattering. And it's not my style either. I don't care. That's all
right.
But it's, where would Jesus be? And clearly, Jesus would be with these people of pride, marching with them, because they're the targeted community. That's why we need a pride a parade. And it's gotten to be a bigger thing for us, much more about our human rights consciousness, bigger. We just, if you can embrace gays and homosexuals and transgender, all this stuff, if you can embrace that, then you're ready to start understanding what we're up against with humanity. We got to come up with a formula that works for everybody, and I think it's the Jesus thing. I just know it's so badly appropriated by the people who say they are their leadership. That is what the whole issue of Vienna thieves means. It ain't that they were trying to be rich. It's that the priests were pushing a line that kept the people away from the main subject. Wealth, war, empire. I mean, I hate to be repetitive, but you know, I think I have now got the succinct language for the powers and principalities upon which we live in. And if you can filter wealth, war, and empire everywhere you are here now, and what's been here, what's coming, it's not a pretty picture. But boy, it really fits the biblical picture. And, you know, it wasn't a pretty picture of them either. Let me tell you, again, I don't hate to reiterate it, but it's wartime literature.
Yeah.
They wrote it before they ever built a church, and their people were being killed. A dead Jew on a tree was as common as an apple. So it's like, and then to say that, I follow this guy to the tree because he is the Son of Man. Now, that may sound boring to us, but to them, like, you mean the human one at judgment time with God? Yep, this is the guy. Yep. He's also the suffering servant. Oh, you mean the one that Isaiah wrote about in captivity in Babylon? Oh, yeah, all that. Yeah, he's all that. And then there's the Holy Spirit, which is the thing that transformed this Jew on a tree, transformed him to a resurrection and into a group of people who followed him. Read Acts. I mean, these guys are in and out of jails, starting a mass commune. And when they do get in trouble with the Eucharist, believe me, it is not communion wars that's the issue. It's wealth. The rich were the first ones who needed to be corrected at the table of the Lord, both in Paul and in the book of Acts. Because that, you know, that book of Acts.
Fascinating stuff,
Right? All
right.
You got me wound up. That's all right. I'm going to let you go.
This was really
I'll see
something.
You're free. All right. I'll keep you
informed.
Right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Talk to you next time. Bye-bye. All right. Well, all right, everyone. It is now time to bring Philip Ferrugio. Philip joins me each week from Port Orange, Florida. And I'm going to be adding him into the show momentarily. Here we go. Philip is a very prolific writer, and a lot of his columns are published on a website that I maintain for him. It's theempirestupid.com.
Hello. I'm here.
Hello, Philip.
Yes, yes,
welcome.
I'm here. I am here.
Okay, he's here.
And I'm clear. All right, you know, here's what I'm going to do tonight. I was going to read my very sad piece, but I don't want to read that. So I'm going to read a letter that I sent to the editor of to quite a few newspapers. I sent it the other day, and here it is.
Okay.
Dear editor, okay, living in the New Reich, Florida, USA, 2023, I am actually delighted in what Herr DeSantis and his Florida Board of Education minions adopted this last Wednesday. In a nutshell, cutting to the chase, the new standards approved by this board will mandate that middle school students will be taught that slavery gave black people a personal benefit because they, quote, developed skills, unquote. No, this is not a script. This is not a script for some Woody Allen or Mel Brooks comedy. This is real. One can imagine Joseph Goebbels, Hitler's minister of propaganda, issuing a statement in the 1930s that concentration camp inmates, mostly Jews mixed in with political dissidents, homosexuals, and gypsies, were, quote, developing workshop skills and getting plenty of fresh outdoor air while laboring to death. Worse than even that, imagine the post-war German governments right up to today having their middle school students being taught that garbage. My only delight in hearing of this latest neo-Nazi disgraceful action by our Stop Woke governor and company is my sincere hope that this will wake up millions of sleeping Floridians and hundreds of millions of sleeping Americans. How far can this fascist agenda have to go before good and decent fellow citizens of mine say, enough already? And please don't give me the argument that offering the Hitler's Germany comparison is wrong. The Nazis relied on complacency to allow their movement to grow. That was my letter. So what do you think of that, Chuck?
Very powerful letter, Phil. Really.
Now you live in Florida with me, so are you aware of what this Board of Education did about a week ago? With their ruling?
I wasn't aware of it in as much detail as what you said there. No.
Yeah. Well, that's the standard that they came out with. Now he. To show you what a hypocrite the governor is when he was on the campaign trail after this thing was released, and the reporters were asking him questions, he actually was doing a backdoor defense of what the board did. And he said something to the effect, I don't know if you heard this, but he said, well, you know, you have to understand that, you know, the slaves were, I mean, a slave could have been taught how to be a blacksmith. And that could have helped him later on. So, now, I can see if he's talking about the last few years of slavery. Yeah, when slavery's over, the guy now he's a blacksmith. So, you know, he could. But if for 200 years we had slavery here. So,
yeah.
So I mean, what happened to all those blacksmiths?
even in that last year or whatever.
Oh yeah, of course.
It's still right.
Sick.
That's just crazy. I mean that's like saying look at all the benefit that the people of Pompeii got. Look at all of the tourism in the area.
Now, and it's funny, Chuck, because then about 2 days ago he backed off from this, and he actually said, "Well, I had nothing to do with that. That was the Board of Education. Hey, you picked all these people, you appointed these people. Well, of course they were following your orders. This is what a phony that this man is. He couldn't even take the responsibility" for what the Board of Education did. He tried to cop out by saying, well, that wasn't me. I mean, this is politics, like, street corner, greasy politics. It's terrible. I mean, it's absolutely a crime. It really is a crime, Chuck. And the reason why I'm saying that is I watched the documentary today that actually came out 11 years ago. It was on ESPN. It was called The Ghost of Ole Miss. And it was about the 1962 riots on the campus of Ole Miss that happened when James Meredith was being escorted to register, the first black to register at Mississippi University. And the craziness that occurred to try to stop him, with the governor coming out and saying, I'm not going to allow it and all this crap. And and then Kennedy and his brother, they had to eventually call the National Guard because, the marshals weren't good enough. The riot happened when the U.S. marshals that were there were being attacked. And they killed, I think they killed two of them. Well, they killed two. One guy wasn't a marshal. He was just an innocent guy that was involved in it. But they killed a marshal. It was a really, I didn't know, I never knew how bad that was. I never really heard that much about it, 1962. Yeah. But it was really bad, Chuck, so bad that Kennedy had to call in the National Guard. He had to call in the troops.
Right.
He had to call in with bayonets. Yeah.
Well, Meredith, he was the one who got shot too, wasn't he?
No. That was Medgar Evers.
No,
that was Medgar Evers, man. Meredith, he survived, and he actually.
I'm talking about somebody that survived, but he was shot during a march.
That could be so. I have to look into that. I know Medgar Evers got killed. They murdered him, but he was a civil rights.
Guy. It was it was in 1966. The march against fear, one of the former regular guests on this show was a guy named Sherwood Ross. Sherwood accompanied Meredith on that march.
Oh, really?
And he was right next to him when he got shot. He was the one who pulled in some contacts, basically contacted the White House and got things moving to change the whole shape of the incident.
That's terrible. Yeah, that's really terrible. And you know, it's interesting because watching this documentary, you know, which came out in 2012, but I never saw it before. So watching it today, it was a 1 hour documentary. It was really good. But all the, you know, all the interviews of, anyway. But the bottom line, Chuck, the reason why I decided to read my letter tonight, and I'm going to write a piece about it, and the piece is going to be called "The Past is Prologue." And I'm going to write about what happened in 62 and how nothing has changed.
Yeah.
In the minds of people. Yeah, obviously, black people are going to colleges now, you know, in the South and all that. But basically, in the minds of the public, when you have what happened here in Florida with the Board of Education and the slavery thing, and then DeSantis, in a lot of states, they're not going to allow critical race theory to be taught in colleges even, you know, which talks about slavery. They really just want to get students to not even learn about slavery, which is really sad. I mean, the Civil War, you know, and I love the Southerners, and even I fell for this when I was back in college. What the Southerners had done was they used the excuse that the Civil War was really about states' rights.
Right.
Well, yeah, it was about the right to have slavery. You know, so you want to call it states' rights, that's one way of trying to lie, but it was really about slavery. The Civil War.
Wasn't it about whether the states had the right to secede from the Union?
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
If the United States had just allowed, said, okay, you voted to be another country, go ahead, good luck.
Yeah, but then they would have had
there
slavery.
There wouldn't have been a war. There wouldn't have been a war.
Well, yeah, you're right. There might not have been a war, but there was. There's other things. I just think that the and by the way, somebody read a piece by Abraham Lincoln, what he wrote in that era, and you know when you read what Lincoln wrote, he was basically a white supremacist. He was a white supremacist, but he wanted to keep the Union together, but he really was a white supremacist. So, you know, look, I understand it was a different time. I understand that there had been slavery, so therefore slavery was the norm, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was the norm. So I understand that. I understand that it's not the same as what we're looking at now when we talk about slavery. But that doesn't make it right, because something is the norm. I mean, what DeSantis and other governors and other states are doing to try to not let students learn about slavery. What did they say about Rosa Parks? They put in one of the school books that she just didn't want to sit in the back of the bus, something like that. They didn't talk about the fact that it was segregated and she wasn't allowed to sit in the front of the bus. I'm just saying that what's happening now, Chuck, is scary, because that was 60 years ago, what happened in Mississippi. And it's really, I mean, the mindset of the public is pretty bad. I mean, you got a lot of MAGA people who just they're white supremacists. They believe in the white replacement theory, that white people are under attack, and that we're being it's like, remember I talked about it on your show a couple of times. It's like the Israeli engineer on that plane. I said this maybe last week.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. When he said to me, he said, you know, the Palestinians are like your blacks in the South. And he said, he said they breed like rabbits. He actually said that to me. This is a very intelligent man, very well-educated man. He's an engineer. And he said they breed like rabbits, the Palestinians. And we have no choice. If we don't do anything, they're going to overpopulate us. And the only option we have is to push them into the sea. That's what he said. It's not nice what we're going to do, what we're doing, but we have no choice. We have to push them into the sea. That's what he said. So.
Yeah.
And that's the mindset now. That was in 1988 that the guy told me that. The mindset, look what's happening over in Israel now, Chuck.
I know.
I mean, they're increasing all these settlements. They're pushing Palestinian families out of their homes, out of their neighborhoods, and they're building more and more of these settlements. And the Supreme Court the government wants to limit the Supreme Court to have power over the government. Scary, right?
Yeah.
And then look what happened here with our Supreme Court, you know, recently.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
You know, it's just everything is. I believe, Chuck, that everything is connected. What's happening in Israel is very connected to what's happening here. The only difference, Chuck, is that the Israeli population has, as we say in Italian, they have the groyunes, all right? They have the balls, you know, to go out and to protest. Over here, there's no protest against what DeSantis and these other...
Yeah.
You know, fascists are doing. There's no street protests here. There's no nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Scary. I mean, write letters to the editor, and that's about it. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know, Chuck. I it's a sad time. You know, it's a sad time. And of course, I'm not crazy about the Biden administration. So you know, I mean. I mean, I'm not a, you know, I don't like what the Biden administration is doing, too, you know, with the thing in, you know, the thing with Ukraine and China now and Russia. I mean, they're starting a new Cold War. That's what they're doing. So that's not good either, is it?
No, it's crazy.
I'll just give you, I don't know how much time we have. I'll just give your people.
You got about 3 minutes.
Yeah, I'll give the people listening to this a little information. Afghanistan has a lot of lithium in the ground and other, was it cobalt and they have a lot of minerals that are needed to make all these cell phones and batteries and stuff. And there's a whole battle going on between the U.S. interests. The Chinese are already making deals with the Taliban to get in there to do the you know, mining, and there's a whole bunch of stuff happening now in Afghanistan. It has nothing to do with religion, nothing to do with terrorism. It's about lithium. That's what happened in Bolivia when they usurped Evo Morales. Why was he? Because Bolivia has a lot of lithium in the ground, and they wanted to make sure that the certain interests, meaning the United States, has the first choice of the lithium. So and then they have Australia. I think Australia is supposed to have the most lithium of any country in the whole world. Yeah, I was reading about that today. So I'm just saying there's a lot of stuff happening, and it's all about money, you know, nothing to do with religion or...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So anyway, just wanted to share that with you and your people.
Yeah, that's very good to know.
Well, thank you for having me on. Is that it?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we're about wrapped up. Thank you, Philip. Appreciate you being part of the show week after week. And, always something to think about. So.
Well, thank you, Chuck, and have a good weekend.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
Okay. And listeners, let me remind you that this is a listener-supported radio station. And they really do deserve your support. The team at Revolution Radio, they're all volunteers. Any money that comes in goes to keep the station running. That's it. So be generous. Be generous. I subscribe on Patreon. That's one way. There are a lot of things that you can do. Just check it out. Go to the website at revolution.radio and see what you can do to promote free speech in this country, because that's what this station is all about. They're letting people express their opinions. Free speech is supposed to be something that we have. So we have to use it. That's the best way to protect it. All right, then. We're just about up to the station break. And I do again want to thank you for being with me here on the New American Dream Radio Show. And we should be coming back to you in about 5 minutes. After the station break, and got a couple more really good guests for you, Michael Annis and Karen Katepski. So don't miss it. Talk to you on the other side of the station break.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crip Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's Ivan, thank you. Welcome to the crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B. at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, everyone, to the New American Dream Radio Show. So glad to have you here tonight. I'm going to add now Michael Annis, who's going to be joining me from Denver. Michael is a poet, a musician, a publisher, an artist, and what a talented guy, really. Very lucky to have him as part of this show.
Hello,
Michael. All right. Welcome. I was just bragging about you.
Go ahead. Don't let me stop.
That's all right. That was enough.
Well, of course, I'm having computer crashes right now, but that's okay. I can try to wing this without the assistance of my ever unfaithful computer system.
Okay.
Okay.
All righty then.
It awakes, Chuck. It awakes.
It awakes.
Here we go.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So let me really try to call it up because I've made notes all afternoon, eliminating, of course, all the swear words that are always on my mind and upon the tip of my tongue. Ready at any moment to discharge into the electronic airways.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. I know you don't find that too funny, but I really am just modest. So, hey, I have a quick question. This is going to be easy, I think.
Okay.
Is Ava there tonight?
Ava was on the beginning of the show.
Okay, she's not there now.
No, nobody.
Okay,
else there.
All right. Well, sometimes she kind of hangs out, and sometimes she doesn't.
Not today.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's good to be back on the New American Dream, and I do hope that unbelievable. Okay. Yeah, it's time for me to get a new computer, man. I've been telling my wife that I just can't do this anymore because I never know when it's going to work and when it isn't. So anyway, I sent you a book and we're going to talk about it.
Yes. It's, took my breath away. Oh, no. That.
Hey, that was cool. I liked it. You snuck the title in, right? You did
yeah,
a me.
Yeah. You like that? Yeah. It's a cool book. Yes. Messenger of the Covenant.
Well, that's the overarching. Okay, so I'm glad you brought that up, because the book that I sent you is a short book. It's a novella. It's only 80
yes.
pages long.
Uh-huh.
It's a division. A major division within a larger work called Messenger of the Covenant. And this one is
okay.
titled, the one you have, is, you know, the maiden voyage is titled Breath. And it's a division.
Yeah.
And Messenger of the Covenant is a division of an even larger work called Basileia, which is comprised of three main parts.
Hmm.
So when all of this is completed, there would be a total of at least 9 short books or novellas within the entire Basileia canon of work. So if you know, 9, 8, 720 pages down the road, but we're starting with the first one, which is 80 pages. And actually we did,
okay.
you and I together, we did a portion of a separate division probably a year ago.
Mm.
I don't know if you remember that or not, but we did.
I remember doing something, but I don't remember the details. So.
Okay, that's because the book is so interesting. You wouldn't remember it. Okay.
Hey. Not at all.
Okay, so back to structure. So this one, Breath, is based not on but within. The collision, see these notes that I make so that I can really articulate well on your program without a whole lot of hesitance. I know that I'm getting my point across, and it's not going to be extremely blurry no matter what I say. So anyway, this based within the collision of two separate events. It's one in the not too distant past and one in the not too distant future. With the characters transitioning both from past into future.
Mm.
Okay?
Okay.
All right, so it's a complex
yeah.
work. It's multi-layered. I always write that way, no matter what, because I can't, I can't avoid the impulse of my darker nature to to do something like that. And when you look through it, well, I don't know. I can give you from the back cover an overview of what's on the inside of the book for the New American Dream audience. So it says, imagine there's no heaven. In 21st century Wyoming, tempest, it's hard to find, particularly in a turbulence-driven prairie internment camp for Christian nationalists and timers. Though if you interrogated their pastor apostle, their leader, heaven was all around them, up, down, side to side, inside, outside, past, present, future, for seeing was of the Lord and not of man, and imprisonment just a state of maligned mind. Whoever one was, there was the Lord and the Lord's work to be done. Regardless of human history, climate cataclysm, pandemic, starvation, deep state governments, asteroids of doom, supernovae of Earth star, Holocaust, Armageddon, nuclear war, all was under God's control. In Chicago, 1958, where breath was fire, imagining heaven became impossible, for that and grief was all that was left for them. So that's an overview. So, though it might sound like Breath is a religious book, I really don't classify it as such. And the reason for that, I've termed it to readers in conversations with them, just like I'm having with you right now.
Uh-huh.
I've termed it as a theological entanglement with reality, not a religious tract, not a religious tome. And I hope that that makes sense, where theology actually entangles with reality. It's a book about survival of the human mind and the human spirit when assaulted, battered, or repressed by coercions, exterior or interior, in the case of, for example, genetic transportation of what French philosopher Jacques Lacan would call ontologies, things that are so ingrained or imprinted in the DNA, they reappear in successive generations. So all that is fundamental to what's going on within the book. And I managed to, with a little bit of linguistic acrobatics, get a good part of that into the first 80 pages.
Well, it's a beautiful book. I've just barely started it, but I look forward to reading the rest. And of course, now we did part of this, or what was it that we did on the show?
We did a different part, which is from the other another division. Okay, so the divisions. So the first three divisions of Messenger of the Covenant is breath, and then there is Therion, which in the ancient Greek, Therion is little beasts, and it refers to such things as plague, or any kind of illness, anything that would. The little beast would be representative also of spirits that come into the body. That's the theological entanglement. I mean it comes through language. The language is broad enough that you have multiple layers of meaning within the same term. Just like in this one, the word breath. In this, the same word, and not just in Greek or in Hebrew, or biblically speaking, not only does breath mean breath, but it also means spirit, and it also means wind or force. And that's why when you open up the book, you'll see those quotations where it talks about the breath of God, you know, and so on and so forth. Yeah. From the old, those two quotations are from the Old Testament. Mm. Oh, that being said, once again, it's not a religious book. It's a book about survival. Right. It's about what do we do with things that exist, which aren't necessarily accurate, but are believed to be so, which aren't necessarily provable, but are believed to be so. Which the belief can be so strong that it colors everything else.
Mm.
I'm doing pretty well since I'm just kind of shooting from the hip right now, Chuck. I'm not even.
Yeah,
looking,
I'm
looking
roll.
Up at this. I'm looking up at the ceiling and I'm not even looking at my notes. Okay, so the third, and all of this is set. That the stage is set in breath. But the third division is called, now here's one you're going to really like, okay? Necromantian. Necromantian. Necromantian.
Huh.
That's the ancient temple of the dead in ancient origins, right? Necromantian is used as a division title in Messenger of the Covenant. And it'll be its own novella, right?
Uh-huh.
And the Necromantium, ancient temple dedicated to the god of the underworld, Hades, and his consort, the goddess Persephone. So, according to ancient Greek beliefs, while the bodies of the dead decayed in the earth, their souls would be released and travel to the underworld via fissures in the earth. So the fissures in the earth, I mean, that's an interesting application, too.
Okay.
Because of the idea of tectonics. And I talk about in Ab initio, I talk about the tectonic plates of the soul. That is a piece that is separate and precedes this. But,
right. Okay.
You know, it's it's the constant interplay of language. And what does language do? Well, it constantly evolves. It doesn't just evolve as we speak it. It evolves internally within the individual. So, yeah, yeah. And getting to that, oh, geez, and getting to that, I'm trying not to be boring. It's so difficult not to be boring. Okay. Okay. Because my inclination is to go to the lowest common denominator and be boring. Okay. All right. But I want to get to this idea. All right. And I'm not just picking on Christianity. I know we have a fissure between us, Chuck, you and I. I'm not picking on Christianity, but I want to discuss it a little bit, since the people in the internment camp consider themselves to be Christian, right? Okay. And what happens in the past, that the event that happens in the past, were Catholics. Some Christians, not me, but some Christians do not consider Catholics Christians. They consider them Catholic. There's a fine division. You know, they like to refine it, so essentially they're the only ones who are going to heaven. You get it?
Yeah.
I hear you disagreeing in your soul.
I have not heard this very much, but okay.
Okay. Can I get back to my point?
Yes, please do.
The problem, okay, but this is really important, okay, and this is all based on language. Okay, the problem with Christianity, this is one of my notes, so if I sound like I'm reading my notes, I am. The problem with Christianity, like most religions, and in particular American Christianity now, since ours is the dominant culture presently on the face of the earth, American, America, American, etc., we are the dominant culture, is that it produces nearsightedness and short-sightedness. This is one thematic substrate of breadth, how organized religion, with its nods of various approvals by those who've been indoctrinated by the common perceptions of religious practitioners who came before them and indoctrinated them in acceptable interpretations of the beliefs of 12 loosely organized groups of intrepid desert nomads who were somewhat reluctant sponges of other dominant groups that often conquered them, such as Babylonians, Persians, in the case of Breath, this book, Ancient Egyptians. It's language-based. In other words, our language is our vehicle of expression, and locked within the language are all of our cultural values and very little transcendence of the moment in common. And so I'd like to share with you, I was thinking about this way, way back when, in 1997, 96.
Okay.
And my friend Stephanie, my dear friend Stephanie, who I was hoping would be on the program with us tonight, brilliant woman, she turned me on to a book that, by reading Breath, she decided she needed to read this other book. And lo and behold, there was some kind of serendipity going on in the background. And she sent me this book by a fellow named Mauro Biglino. It's called Gods of the Bible. And I want to read a passage from that. I don't want to belabor it because I have other things I would like to. I might even like to read something from Breath, you know, just to stimulate the conversation. I don't know. Hang on just a second. Let me get it. It's only going to take a second. So I bought it at her suggestion. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me, Chuck?
Hear you.
Hello, Chuck?
Yeah. Yes, we
Chuck,
hear you.
Are you.
We do
Chuck,
hear
over
you.
Over an hour. Okay, okay. So, at her suggestion, yeah, chapter two, I started reading, which the chapter is just titled Elohim, or Elohim, and what God, in quotes, means. So he says, in particular, we ask ourselves, does Elohim mean God or not? We know what Elohim means to us today. This is really important. Or better, we know what it means to most translators of the Bible today because it's not common usage among most Christians. Elohim, they use God, they use Jehovah, they use Yahweh, they use whatever they use, right? But Elohim is kind of a background word. But the reality is that no one knows precisely what the word Elohim meant for the authors of the ancient biblical texts at the time when they were written. So in the so my note was, because culturally we are removed from time and place and languages change. It's hard enough to translate modern Spanish into English if you don't have cultural values in English that match cultural values, you know, that are separate in both languages.
Yeah.
So it is very difficult to translate. So what we're doing is we're translating from centuries ago, millennia ago, we're translating. Okay, so what he says, Biglino says, is in the study of ancient languages, it is not uncommon to be uncertain about the primitive meaning of certain words. All the ancient texts that we know once stood in a cultural context that has disappeared forever, the contours of which are often vague and can be inferred only partially from the text itself. The point of philological and historical research is to bring to light concepts and aspects that have been taken for granted for so long that no one questions them anymore. Okay? Perhaps this logic would make more sense if we were to turn the question around and focus for a second on the concept of God rather than Elohim. So it goes on and on and on. And I was saying the same thing way back, you know, 30 years ago. Same thing. Whoa, whoa, whoa. What are we talking about here? We're not talking about the same God that they were talking about, the ancient Hebrews were talking about, because we don't have the cultural construct around us that explains to us what we're saying. Anyway. So this book and these books, it gets into the idea of dogma and what dogma, pervasive dogma, does to creativity, the understanding creatively of what something might mean and how you actually should apply it. You know, just because we're the dominant culture now, it doesn't mean that we are the only ones who interpreted ancient scriptures the way they should be interpreted. It's a matter of the change of language through the millennia with each culture. So, all right, here it's ancient Egypt. And I would like to read something, you know, I actually have this like posted in a little block sign in my studio.
Oh.
Here is a scripture that is most often ignored in churches. Quote, "And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in words and in deeds before God and all the people." That's in the book of Acts, a New Testament book. Acts 7:22. Direct correlation between learning the wisdom of ancient Egypt and becoming or being mighty in both words and deeds before not only God but all the people, and he led them out of Egypt by this stature of knowledge. I could go on, but I won't. Okay. Anyway, the book, because I'm running out of time, the book is illustrated by, and it's not really illustration, once again, it's collaboration, by my friend and oftentimes, in fact, mostly of the time, collaborator, Henry Avignon, who is one of the great artists, I believe, my opinion, of our time, depending on your definition of greatness, and also by a person who preceded him by two generations, and that's Jack Brennan. Jack Brennan was in the generation before me. Okay. And Henry is about 25 years younger than I am, see? So it's another generation. But both of these artists were significant or have been significant within the, you know, their cultural, within the time of how they have been creating during the culture. So probably talk too much, but and maybe I will get to reading about the artists another time. So what I want to do, what we talked about earlier, is having a book giveaway.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yes. Wow. All right.
Okay. Chuck, you're not sniffing glue again, are you?
Before we run out of time. All right.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. All right. Okay. I love you, my friend. So, yeah, so we have an address, and if you want to give that email address, the first five people that request a book, I will happily send them a book free of charge, including no shipping charges. It's absolutely free.
Oh, man, what a
hot
deal.
Off,
all right.
Hot yeah. off the press, first five. If we get a good response, I might even send the first 10 people who respond
okay.
to books. Because I want the book to be read, and I want the book to be discussed, you know, and I want it to challenge thinking and maybe reinforce thinking. Who knows what'll happen?
So,
but if you ought to give the
listeners, do you have your pencils out or your little text editor open or whatever? Here is something that you need to be able to get back to. Okay, it's giveaway@newdream.us. Send an email to giveaway@newdream.us.
And let's make it really simple. The subject line will be breath, B-R-E-A-T-H.
Perfect.
Subject line of the email and the request for a book, the subject line is breath. How's that sound, Chuck?
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right.
So, breath is the book, and how you get it for free, if you're one of the first 5 to 10 people who request one, giveaway@newdream.us. Am I correct?
Yes. Giveaway@newdream.us. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, that's great.
So if you don't want me to babble on,
Babylon,
there was a joke there.
Yeah,
so if you don't want me to Babylon.
That's an ancient joke.
That's from my ancient man who lives inside me.
Okay.
Okay. Who actually witnessed to some of the paintings in the ancient caves of Lascaux and Altamira, so forth. He was there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. Alrighty then.
Say it again so they get it. What's the address?
giveaway@newdream.us.
And what do they get?
They get a book. It's called...
And does it cost them anything?
And it doesn't cost them anything at all.
And do they have to pay for shipping?
Shipping! Oh!
No shipping!
That's
the publisher
right.
picks up shipping.
Yeah.
All right.
That's pretty good. No ship.
I'm planning on sending Ava a book, whether she wants one or not.
Cool. Great.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah, you could tell her.
Right.
Come on. I'm just going to send her an email myself and tell her she has to send an email requesting it to you. Okay.
There you go.
All right.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Thanks again so much for being with me. Every month on this show, and I'm really glad to, this was interesting, and This is really is a fascinating book, and I look forward to reading the rest of it. So, all right.
Next month, I may actually read a couple passages from the book.
Cool. Sounds good.
And if the publisher feels generous, he might even offer another set of five.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, don't count on that, though, listeners. You get your email in right now.
Right. That's what we want.
All right.
Okay, Chuck.
Thanks, Michael. All right.
Great to be with you again.
Yeah. Nice to be. All right. Nice to have you. All right. Talk to you next
time. All right. Bye-bye.
Yep. All right, listeners. We have one more guest. It's Karen Katosky. And she's a fascinating guest. She'll be joining us from Virginia. And here we go. Okay. Karen's a fascinating guest who is here with us on this fourth Thursday of every month. She's run for office in Virginia. She was in the Pentagon on 9/11, and she's just a very interested and interesting analyst. And we're waiting for this to go through. I think I missed clicking a button. So here we go. Okay, she should be with us anytime now. Okay. Hello,
hello.
Karen.
Yes.
Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. I'm so glad to have you back with us.
Yeah.
Hope you're doing well.
It's good to be back here. I mean, I was trying to think of what kind of thing I could focus on tonight, and I really, you know, the news is so crazy. I mean, there's so many different things.
No kidding.
you know, I mean, you know, lawyers. It's just lawyers. Lawyers are crazy. All these things are happening, and yet, you know, the average person, just the regular average old person in this country, we don't get the same kind of imagination that we see with the lawyers that we read about in the newspaper, you know. You know, we don't it's almost like what we hear about in DC and New York and the big places where the lawyers are suing or doing this and that. I mean, if you look at the Drudge Report, I mean, half of it has to do with charges and court cases, some relating to politicians and others just relating to you know, companies or part of the elite, you know, and it's just entertainment. I mean, it has so little to do with justice, and that's what people want. People want justice. I mean, I guess we do like the entertainment part, but honestly, it just seems so disconnected from reality. And the average person's experience with law enforcement, the average person's experience with the legal system or rules that they have to live by. It's just crazy. But anyway, I guess what I kind of wanted to talk about, and maybe this leads into it a little bit, is, you know, the impression and the reaction that people are getting and the reaction they're having to Bobby Kennedy Jr., you know, his campaign. People are just shocked that this guy is saying things that make sense repeatedly over and over again, no matter how who he's talking to or what questions they're asking him or how mean they are to him. It's like, wow, this guy's making sense, and he's not fazed by, you know, by this. It's like all the other stuff's entertainment, and then you have a little sense of something really, really solid. You know, and people are responding to that, and you can say it's authenticity, but I think it's I heard him described as when he went before the Congress to talk about censorship. Of course, you know, his whole entire Democratic Party was on his case about it. They're telling him, oh no, there wasn't any, or oh wait, there was some, but it was good, we defend that kind of censorship. You know, they're just all over the place, and he was described by one of the reports as like he just seemed like he was the only adult in the room. And, you know, that's it's sad that that's so rare to see, you know, in politicians, because, you know, we kind of think all these leaders that we elect are, you know, we expect them to be the adults, you know, they're political leaders because they're supposed to have leadership ability, you know, and you look at them to lead, you expect them to do that. But in fact, they don't do any of that. And then when you get the few times you see somebody that's actually doing it, you know, it's really shocking. And I mean, it's kind of good to think that it's possible, but it's shocking to find out how really rare it is. And really, honestly, the way people are responding to RFK, not so much the Democratic Party hardliners, because they're frightened to death about him, because, you know, he really is a true old-time Democrat. I mean, he hasn't, you know, he's one of those guys that say, you know, well, my party left me, you know, my party isn't the party that I, you know, he believes he's a Democrat, and he is a Democrat from a few decades ago, maybe a little bit longer, but he's not a modern Democrat. He's nothing like him. And I think that's becoming very clear to so many people, which is really, you know, that's really kind of good. But, you know, Trump had the same during Trump's first run, you know, the phenomenon of Trump as a populist, you know, leader. It's the same thing. You know, they're like, where'd this guy come from? Because he says things I understand. He, you know, seems genuine and authentic. And, you know, people that hate Trump go, oh, that's crazy. Why would you think he's that way? But he came across that way as a populist leader. And if you go back to other populist leaders in the past, like Perot, and I was listening to something the other day, and they talked about Teddy Roosevelt being one of those populist leaders. And, you know, these guys, of course, hated by both populist leaders who were also third parties, third party guys. You know, they weren't really, they were rejected and criticized by both of the two main parties. And of course, we're a two party country. We're a two party country because we have the Electoral College and our system, you know, our system of winner take all. It kind of pressures you to pick one of the other two parties. Third parties can never get enough to field candidates. You know, we don't have a proportional representation system or anything like that, like some other places.
Right.
And because, and you know, and that sounds like it'd be a great idea. Oh, that'd be a great idea. We should do that. We are not a republic, people. If we were, it might be able to work, but we're not. We're an empire. And in an empire, it doesn't matter how many parties you have, because the people are not in control of an empire, and we're not in control of our empire. But anyway, it's nice to see little bits of, authenticity and genuine stuff, and actually knowledgeable and heartfelt messaging. Certainly Bobby Kennedy. But there's another guy. I can't think of his name. The Indian guy that's running in the Republican side. Have you followed him at all? And he's young, a young Indian guy. Yeah, I don't know. He's a tech guy. He made some of his money at tech, but he's young. He's got young kids. But he also is doing something similar to that. He just gets up there in his campaign speeches and has become quite popular. In fact, I think he beat out DeSantis in the number two position, or he's either did beat him in a poll, or he's very close to it. And for somebody who's completely unknown, this guy, and I wish I could remember his name, but he's really doing a good job. And the thing is, when you listen to him talk, he speaks, you know, authentically. And the things that he says make sense to a lot of people, not just Republicans, just like the things Bobby Kennedy says make sense to a lot of things, not just to Democrats. And of course, I'm not talking about the Democrats that control Washington and the party itself. They can't stand Bobby Kennedy. But a lot of people who are Democrats, who are a little unsatisfied with maybe some of the directions. Well, I mean, certainly if you're a Democrat and you say, well, we're the ones that want to keep the money at home to take care of people at home. You know, we're more of a caring party. And then you see all these Democrats lined up to fight wars, particularly, you know, Ukraine is one, but they haven't backed down on any war. I mean, look at Biden. He voted for every war he could vote for. Every chance he had a chance, anytime he had a vote to send troops overseas to kill somebody, Biden voted yes. And so, and of course, you know, the Ukraine project is something he's been working on for a long time. But a lot of Democrats, they don't identify with that. That's not what Democrats feel that they're about. And so Bobby Kennedy speaks to that very articulately and knowledgeably, and people respond well to it. But so do a lot of Republicans. So anyway, I think there's a whole bunch of crossover in the backside of the party. You know, got your Washington talking heads to parties. But then in the backside, there really are some wonderful things happening, which now I say wonderful things happening. They have to, from the perspective of the folks in D.C., these people have, must be stopped. You know, I mean, they don't.
Right, I'm sure. Yeah.
You know, these people have to be stopped. But it's kind of, Americans are getting a little bit of an attitude, frankly. I mean, you know, we've gone through so much stuff, so many lies from government, one thing after another. Nobody respects Biden because of his age and his, you know, all the crap he's pulled and all the stupidity that he exhibits. And nobody like, and they don't like Trump, you know, Trump, my God, you know, they're all criminal. But the thing is, you know, we look at him, we are asserting ourselves. We're saying, you know, we are passing judgment on D.C. And that judgment is not just for comedians or, you know, your social political critics off on the side going, oh, yeah, you know, it's all corrupt. This is the majority view. The majority of view of D.C. is it's a clown show. You know, it's a corrupt clown show, and it represents no one but itself. And I'll tell you, the Democrats have done themselves no favor. I know Republicans are lousy. I watch them actually closer than I do the Democrats. And of course, it's very disappointing. But if you look at the Democrats specifically, and Biden being like the head old guy, I mean, look at Feinstein. Look at Feinstein, and look at how long Pelosi hung on. You know, it's almost like, you know, they're almost like afraid to go back home. You know, they almost, it's so disconnected from the people that they're supposed to be representing. And anyway, I think so many people, you know, we got our lockdown, we got our COVID lies, you know, all the stuff that's being pushed on us by our government. And some people, especially Democrats, very likely to respond to government orders. You know, I don't see Republicans. I'm sorry. I think Republicans have been there. Maybe they're more rednecks or something. They're more willing to push back. I don't know. But the Democrats have been very good about, oh, we have to do what the government says. You know, we have to try to, oh, you know, we like the government telling Facebook to make sure nobody thinks wrong. You know, we think that's better. Okay, well, you know what? Even they are pushing back. Even they are waking up, and they're going, you know what? Maybe we should say the right thing. Guess what? They don't trust government to give them those words. They don't trust government to be able to do it. And why don't they trust it? Because government has proven, at least ours has. I mean, if we looked at other governments, we could make a, you know, we could say this or that. But in the United States, our government has been, frankly, you know, incompetent, self-serving. And everybody thinks that, not just Democrats, not just Republicans, not just independents that. And that's what
and dishonest.
Oh, yeah, absolutely dishonest. Yeah, nobody trusts them. So if you get a guy or a couple of candidates like Bobby Kennedy, who sounds very honest, and, you know, Bobby Kennedy doesn't preach at you. He just, you know, he answers questions. This is how he understands it. This is what he's learned, you know. He doesn't preach at you. That young guy, I can't remember the guy's name. The Indian guy.
Is it Vivek Ramaswamy?
Yes, Ramaswamy. Okay. Yes, Ramaswamy. Ramaswamy is the same way. I mean, he's not preaching. He's saying, here's what I have found. Now, I guess that's a way of preaching, but he's not being better than other people. He's not saying, oh, I'm going to go.
He's not jamming it down. Yeah.
Not to get it down their throat. What he's saying is kind of, in some ways, it's resonating, of course, and it's inspiring people. And so what happens is the nature of our country is changing. And what if they whack these guys, which is what they want to do? When I say they, I mean the powers that be in D.C., you know, the head Democrats and head Republicans. They do not want Ramaswamy. They do not want Bobby Kennedy. And of course, they don't want Trump, but actually they do kind of want Trump. The Democrats need Trump. That's the only way that a Democrat can win, is if they put Trump up there. And so they're going to probably do everything they can to keep Trump as the number one guy. And of course, and not to say that Trump will have a huge support.
That certainly has the possibility of backfiring, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. It's you know, they but they can't, they cannot really. The real danger to them is not just Bobby Kennedy and Ramaswamy, but a bunch of guys like them and a bunch of people like them who are starting to, you know, basically look at things a lot more honestly and a lot more logically than and critically, too. And all and, you know, people responding to that. So they cannot really, it's not like it's one guy and you have an airplane crash and get rid of him. Can't do that.
Right.
It's not going to work. They have to get a bunch of them. And if they get a bunch of them, they got a big problem. And so, I just think it's going to be exciting to see how it all rolls out to the 2024 election. And then that doesn't even talk about the poor Democrats and how they're going to deal with Biden, who has still insists that he's running, although he doesn't really have a campaign. Didn't have a campaign last time he won. So, you know, he probably thinks he can do it again. But, I mean, the Democrats are concerned. You know, he's not a popular guy, and his numbers reflect that, not even among Democrats. And then neither is the vice president. And then what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. There's enough California voters to put the California guy up there, you know, whatever his name, I forget his name, the California governor. He's good looking, but he's not, he has no soul. I mean, he's no, you know, and he has very little of a track record. So even his own state would be hard pressed to support him. So, I mean, I don't think, I don't know how well that was going to work. But so there's a lot of pre-2024 drama that has to happen on the Republican side. I mean, on the Democratic side. And then on the Republican side, of course, you have the drama. You've got the Trump as a felon. You know, is he going to be allowed to campaign from jail? You know, I mean, obviously, I know they won't have him in jail, But, you know, by the date of the court thing that they have, I mean, this is going to be all over the news and just very, very interesting. And then you say, well, who really wants Trump in office or who wants Trump to run? Well, the Democrats Trump's the only guy they might be able to beat. He's the only guy they might be able to beat. So, you know, they could gamble. They could gamble that way. It's just crazy. I don't know. But again, it's most likely no matter who wins, you know, the deep state continues its grip. That is a, you know, that's the sad part. But I do think it's going to be fun to watch how it all unrolls. And it is interesting and it's positive to see as these campaigns start to come out that people are very quickly identifying who's the fake and who's the real. And Ramaswamy is way more real than DeSantis. Okay. And I think that's true. And of course,
I hope people will realize that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think, well, no, they are realizing, they realize it. now, of course, Trump is Trump. You know, people, Trump's the things that the Democrats or other people who despise Trump will say about him, they could be 100% true. But many of those things are why he's popular on the other side. So,
right.
You know, Trump is a very popular case. I mean, in some ways, for all of his inauthenticity, he is seen as the person that will fight for the poor person, fight for the guy in the role who has nothing. Now, you know, if they feel it's a war, they'll go behind him. I mean, they'll support him. But then, you know, and then so Ramaswamy's doing good. Bobby's doing good. Yeah. There's a few others. I think there's a. There's a lady running. There's a female put her hat in the ring. Not the one from South Carolina, not the little neocon from South Carolina. No, not her. But there's somebody else running, too, that has some authentic appeal. And so this is interesting. I think when these candidates come up like this, you know, it's a mutual thing. They are where they are and saying what they say, in part because people are listening to them. Because they actually represent a perspective that is really interesting and
which is something sorely lacking in national politics most of the time.
Well, it really is. I mean, the whole thing is what do they call it? Kabuki theater. You know, it's all it's all and you can choose. You know what the characters are, and you can cheer for this character or, you know, throw spitballs at the other character, but it's all orchestrated. And when these guys, you know, I'm not so deep into conspiracy theories. I do not think that, you know, some deep state plan envisioned a Ramaswamy and a RFK emerging in 2024 to really make government look bad, because that's what they're doing. They are putting words to an amorphous feeling that many Americans have, that their government is exactly what you said. It's a lying, corrupt, you know, seething pile of crap, and they don't like it. And so, but they can't say that. They don't know why they feel that way. And then you get candidates that articulate why in a very calm and rational and yet passionate manner, with the facts, and they hold up examples, and people go, oh my God, that's right. That's what I was thinking. So I don't know. Interesting to see how far they allow the national discussion to go, because both of those guys are not supporting both that Republican Ramaswamy and Bobby Kennedy Jr.
Right.
You know, they'll support the war in Iraq. You know, they don't support telling other countries how to live their lives. They want to put America first, and they aren't using Trump's America first, but that's what they're reflecting the same thing that makes America first popular, which is, you know, we got to take care of this country. And, and you know, we do. And then I hate to bring this up, but cause I don't live in a big city, and I haven't seen it with my own two eyes, but some of this news about, you know, the crime that goes on and the human garbage and even fecal matter that is polluting some of our most beautiful cities. What is that? I mean, I don't know. I only see a little bit in the newspaper. You know, it looks horrendous.
You know, that's really disgusting. But then you think, when you don't have any public bathrooms in a downtown area, and you have people who are homeless, and they have nowhere to go, what do you expect to happen?
I know. Well, the thing is, that's our front yard and our backyard in this country, and that's what we should be taking care of. That's what we should be paying attention to and solving problems. And we're not. But we're all obsessed with sending billions of dollars of military aid and spending trillions of more to replace what we sent to some hoser over in Ukraine, who's also aligned with that.
Yeah.
So why would I mean, this people are upset with the direction of the empire. And then, of course, we've talked before, and I mean, I totally believe the empire is already, it's crumbled. It's crumbling deep. It's a declining empire. It's a failing and miserably declining empire, even though it still looks kind of good on the surface. Like, we go to international meetings and, you know, they say, can't start till the U.S. is here. Well, you know, that may sound like you have power, but in fact, when your money is crap, which ours is, you know, and your justice and rule of law application is so hypocritical that the dumbest and blindest person, you know, can see it and recognize it for what it is. You don't have international. We don't have international respect. People don't respect the United States. The world.
I think that left a long time ago.
That's right.
And it's really a shame. We had an opportunity to be the good guys, you know, but
sure, absolutely, we had it, we squandered it, and now we're not the good guys. And not only that,
no, we're not.
even if we decided as a country, or let's say we got a bunch of people elected and political party leadership decided, you know what, one of our objectives is we would like people in the world to trust America again and to respect American diplomats and to think of the American military as a good thing that actually helps instead of causes chaos and kills their people. Even if we had people at the top who actually said we're going to repair the damage, there would be no way to do it. Because nothing that comes out of Washington or New York is believed by anybody. It's not trusted. We are not trusted. And it is not something that can be, it has to be earned back. And we don't have the time.
That could take a very long time.
If it ever happens, it will definitely take a long time. It will definitely not be something that's overnight, and it's not going to be based on words. It'll be based on actions. And our leadership in this country is a bunch of doddering old fools, and they don't even know how to change. They don't even know it needs to be changed, you know. And that is a shame, because those guys up there in D.C. are smart. You know, they're educated. They're well educated, and they got
good
patients for the most part. They have access to more information than the average person, and yet they still cannot figure it out.
Yeah, how can they not see it?
That's right.
It just boggles my mind sometimes.
That's right. That's right. They don't. So we don't understand how they can't see it. So we say, well, you know, they're probably corrupt. And guess what? That's probably the right answer for about 85%.
Yeah, yeah.
But they probably are.
Right there.
They probably are correct. Well, I know I sent my, I don't know if you heard of the guy, Gonzalo Lira. He's an American Chilean. He's got dual citizenship. And he was in Ukraine. He was in Kiev, and he was reporting and blogging. He's a reporter. And he was blogging from Kiev for the duration of the war. And they arrested him once last summer. For a week, they took him for a week. Well, anyway, they came and collected him. They being Zelensky's Secret Service, they came and got him, and it was videoed he was live streaming it until they shut that down.
Right.
And they took him out of his apartment or wherever his rental unit that he was staying in, and he has been heard from since. And it was because he and this happened about 6 weeks ago. So I wrote my congressman. And it was the same time we were talking about, it was around the same time, maybe a little bit after, the big issue was with the Wall Street Journal reporter who Russia accused of spying and put that guy in jail.
Right.
And so Washington has been D.C. people and Biden and all that talking big about this reporter who they said, well, there's no way this guy was spying for anybody. And, of course, he was a reporter on technical some military issues, but in any case, he was in places where they accused him of taking pictures of buildings that he was taking pictures of, which actually, if you've been in a lot of foreign countries, there are places they don't want you to take pictures of. So that doesn't mean you're a spy, but at least it's something that there's like a law. So Gonzalo Lira, his problem was he criticized Zelensky on his blog, on his live newscast, and he's been doing it, and he wasn't. And they didn't like it, so they took him down, just like he shut down the churches. So, but anyway, I wrote my comment real quick. I heard no response on the story.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Revolution. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen, with host Zen Garcia, at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
we did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course.